You're about to hear my conversation with Kevin Powell. He returns to the show. We continue our conversation about YouTube, and this time we focus on building a business and monetizing off of that audience. Let's get into it. Hey, before I roll today's episode, here's my real-time update on what I'm working on. I'm recording this update on March 8th, 2024. Well, if you've been following my story heading into this year, then you know I'm in a transition phase. I'm exploring some new directions to take in my business. And this month, I decided to come back to my roots and focus my energy on what I do best, and that's building new products. So I've launched what I'm calling a product studio, and I'm calling it Instrumental Products. It's where I get to partner with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies on taking new product ideas from concept to launched. And, you know, since I'm a full stack designer and developer, my focus now is on continuously building new software products and continuing to grow that muscle. Sometimes I'm building products with clients, sometimes with partners, and building some new products of my own to grow out my portfolio at Instrumental Products. And as always, I love to build in public on my YouTube channel and on Twitter and, you know, share the process of taking new product ideas to life. So that's what I'm up to, building products in public. And I'm still running my SaaS product, Clarity Flow, which is doing its thing this year. All right, so that's my update. You can follow along with me on Twitter. I'm at CastJam. I'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback for anything I'm working on, especially this show on the podcast. And with that, let's get into today's show. So Kevin Powell returns to the show and we continue our conversation about how he grew his YouTube channel to over 800,000 subscribers. We actually covered that in depth in the previous episode with Kevin. In this one, we dive into the business side of what he does. And that's primarily he teaches courses on front-end web development and CSS specifically. It's a really great conversation. I learned a ton. This one was recorded on December 7th, 2023. I think you're going to like it. Here's my conversation with Kevin. Enjoy. So we'll just kind of roll right into it here. We're back with Kevin Powell. Welcome back to the show, Kevin.
Thanks for having me once again.
So, you know, in the last episode that we did together, we did a deep dive into your YouTube channel and how you've grown to over 800,000 subscribers on YouTube over many years. You're focusing on CSS and front-end development. So a lot of really great information on, I guess, in terms of your overall business, that's probably like the primary, like top of funnel audience driver, distribution channel, if you will. In this episode, I wanted to kind of dig into everything that comes after that, right? So somebody discovers you on YouTube, they're enjoying your videos, they're getting value from them. Maybe they're subscribed to you on YouTube. Maybe they're catching your YouTube shorts or your long form. Where do you want your audience to go from there? Like, do you want them to come to your newsletter? Do you want them to come to your website and check out your courses? How are you thinking about that?
I mean, if they go to my website and buy a course right away, I'm happy. But my primary, yeah, as you said, that's the top of my funnel. And from there, my goal is usually to try and get them onto the newsletter.
Okay.
Which is easier said than done, but that's the first place I usually try to get them.
Got it. And your YouTube, your newsletter is like you're sending that on a weekly basis. That's like what is the content of your newsletter?
So my newsletter these days is just sort of whatever I'm thinking about in any given week. It tends to fall into like some sort of random general advice that would be related to someone who's, you know, a front-end developer of some sort. Sometimes this is general things on learning. Sometimes it's, I'm trying to think of other topics that I've done. Sometimes it's very specific on CSS, and it sort of varies. Sometimes it's 2,000 words long. Sometimes it's 500 words long. It's whatever I sort of feel like in the week. And then I also end up doing a section that's just where I link to the videos that I've done in that week or any other content that I've done. And then also another section that's sort of, call it other awesome stuff from around the web. So any interesting links and articles and resources and whatever that I have in that I've come across in the last week, I'll link off to. as well, just to try and make sure there's, you know, value that people are getting from it as much as possible.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of value kind of packed into each individual newsletter. That's cool. One thing that I'm sort of curious about as I'm planning out my YouTube channel for 2024 is, you know, I've been learning a lot about kind of like the call to action near the end of your videos. The general strategy that I've heard about, I'm curious if you actually do this or not. Like, do you send, like, somebody has finished watching your video or near the end of it, are you sending them to another video on your channel to sort of keep them on there? Like, you've just watched this, now watch this video on this similar topic.
Yeah. Are you doing a lot of that? I do. Yeah. Basically every video will end with me saying, you know, if you enjoyed this, you'll probably like this one too. A lot of the time, if I mention like a topic along the way that I'm not specifically diving into, I'll be like, and you know, here's that video that I'd mentioned along the way, or sometime, you know, anything that I think would be, if I didn't talk about specific topics, so I can't point to like this one other video, and just be like, if you thought this was cool, you'll probably like this too, or whatever. Mm. And I have seen, because YouTube prioritizes watch time so much, so if you can get people watching more than one of your videos, that's a super strong signal for them. Mm-hmm. And I have, like, you get the analytics on the click-through rates on the end screen cards. And if you do, like, if I look at my early stuff where I wasn't doing that, it's like 5 to 10 times higher if I point out a specific video.
Yeah. Do you ever do, like, point people to your newsletter or to your website and bring them, like, in the content of your video?
Yeah, I will. It depends on the video, and it's something I'm trying to do more often, whether it's either specifically mentioning a course or mentioning my newsletter, the podcast, whatever it is. So I'll try and talk about it sometimes earlier on, or maybe like I've done ones where it'd be a topic that I've actually covered in the newsletter that was sort of like sparked an idea. So I'll be like, this idea came from my newsletter, if you'd be interested in that, not missing out anything. I do less of that just because, again, YouTube prioritizes watch time so much that I'm always like concerned, like, is the video not going to do as well if I'm getting people off site? Even though I haven't seen like major drop-offs, I don't know if it would prevent a video from like actually taking off or not. I'm like, you know, going viral or something, but performance, I've never seen like a huge hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. All right. So let's like talk about the business side a little bit. So can you maybe like run down, like, what are the different channels of revenue that you have? But from what I can see, you know, there are courses. Do you do any like sponsorship stuff?
Yeah. My main income is from courses. Then it would be the YouTube channel monetization, which if anybody's hoping to like start a YouTube channel and make money from it, it's not going to come from YouTube. It's there. It's nice that you get money from it, but it also depends on your niche, right? Because ad rates depend on topic and web development. I think there's, well, these days, maybe it'll go up because they're starting to stop ad blockers and stuff. But when you have a tech-savvy crowd, I think that doesn't help with your ad rates compared to some other topics that are out there. So it depends on that. But that's comes in there. I have a Patreon that makes up a small amount. And I haven't done sponsors in at least 4 years now. But I just agreed to a sponsorship, actually. One of the reasons I don't is because, or I haven't been doing them, is because I already have trouble marketing my own products. It's just like I'm the opposite of a used car salesman type. Like, even if I believe in the product, I have trouble marketing it. So even if it's something I made, like, I just feel icky advertising. So I was always really picky. And then when the channel was smaller, working with advertisers, like, the amount of work you'd have to do, even on like, you know, a 30-second shout out, this video is brought to you by, it tends to be a decent amount of work. And if you don't have a big channel, like, the income from it's not fantastic anyway. But I've been getting lots of requests, and these days it seems to be more, well, there's still like the random, you get companies emailing you and you're like, you really think my channel's the right fit? Like, there's no lineup, but there's been a lot more products that actually my audience would be interested in. And so if I see it as something that like my audience would actually be interested in, and this is what happened with this last company, and I think we're going to get it to work out. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then like, I need to try your product. I'm going to play around with it, see if I like it. And if it's something that I'd like, that I would actually use day to day, and that I think my audience would benefit from, then let's move forward with it. But it's still something that I'm going to be super picky with, just because I don't have to. And
yeah, I was going to say, like, so it sounds like the bulk of your revenue comes from courses.
But... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The large majority is from my courses.
Got it. And is there anything else that might be like invisible, like, I don't know, like consulting or like, other kind of teaching stuff?
Yeah, there is a little bit, but it's not enough that's really worth talking about. Just because I was doing more consulting earlier on, and it was just, it tended to be like the return on investment wasn't enough to be able to justify it. I might be doing something coming up just because I do like doing it every now and then, just to sort of be like keeping my hands in the industry a little bit.
Yeah, we were talking about this in the previous episode. Really, staying up to date on this stuff. Obviously, you do when you're researching mm-hmm. to teach a topic. But I mean, I know that I have always learned the most from needing to learn something so that I can build something real, you know?
Yeah. And I don't want to be like that university professor who's been teaching something for 20 years and hasn't actually have any practical experience. Like, that doesn't help people either.
Yeah. But I have forever, I've always wanted to like take my real work, like in my business or my products, and what can I film here? What can I like cut out and use as a tutorial? And that never works. Cause like in the real world, it's like everything is so messy and like unorganized and like not in a teachable form, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So the courses, I mean, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about also, actually, before we get into the courses, is the Discord community. Mm-hmm. And I guess this sort of gets back to like how you spend your entire week. I know a lot of it is on research and creating YouTube content. So tell me about the Discord community. I assume it's pretty active and you've got a lot of people in there. How involved are you in there? Are you spending a lot of time like engaging in there?
Most of the time, yes, but it depends on how busy I am, because it definitely is, it's a little bit like social media. Like if I end up going in, I end up wasting time in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say it as wasting time, because at the same time, I think it's valuable in the sense that like, it's an awesome way to interact with my community. You know, people like ask me questions and comments on YouTube videos. I'm like, I can't have a technical discussion here about anything.
That's actually what I was going to ask too, is like when you're teaching technical topics, I have rarely posted some videos on technical topics, and I've received some like technical support for those topics. Like, do you have like a general, excuse me, do you have a general like policy on like, you know, you can't answer every technical question or like help people debug things?
Yeah, these days I usually just say like, if you're having trouble, like head on over to the Discord. It'd be a lot easier. You'll get a faster response. Because even the problem with YouTube as well, like if I reply to someone, if they reply back to me, chances are I won't see it.
Right.
You know, I'm getting tons of comments, and the default sorting behavior is just to show you the newest ones that don't have a response first. So it's just things get lost. Like I'm not going to remember usually. Even if people, I get a lot of emails too of people asking me for stuff, and unless it's a really easy answer, it's usually like, you know, can you go to the Discord and ask there? Because again, you'll get a faster response. Right. You can share code in there. Have multiple heads looking at it too, which is usually useful. So yeah.
But those are like just community members. You don't have anyone like on your team who's working in there for you?
No, not right now. It's something that I have thought about, but there's a few members that sort of lead the charge on some stuff. And there's even like, I'll see questions come up in the help forums and I'm like, oh, I want to answer that one. And it's already been answered by someone. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, okay, thanks. But I will say, if anybody's interested in starting a Discord, like it took a long time to get to the size where it was actually, because I think what happens with a smaller one is like, there's not a lot of activity. So people come in and it's basically a ghost town. Mm-hmm. So then they don't really stick around. And even with like tons of members, most of them aren't active. Like most people are lurkers.
They're just lurking.
Or they come in and they ask a question, they get their answer, and then they're gone. So like, even though I have a ridiculous, I can't remember how many people it is, but it's over 10,000 people that are officially in the server. I know most of the the people that post the most, I know them all. Yeah, right.
I,
so it's,
I can see that.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick. This podcast is sponsored by Instrumental Products. That's my product studio, where I and my small crew, we take new product ideas from concept to launched. I'm a full stack product designer and developer, and I love collaborating with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies to bring that spark of energy into new product ideas. Think of Instrumental Products as your shortcut to shipping that next idea and getting it into the hands of your customers as efficiently as possible. Got something to ship? Let's talk. Visit instrumentalproducts.com to learn more. All right, so like, tell me about the courses. Like, are I was browsing your like catalog of courses. Looks like there are a few free ones, and then you've got these premium ones. Even the premiums seem very low priced for. I didn't check all of them, but how do you think about like pricing and your lineup of courses?
Yeah, so one of the problems I've had is not being very intentional with organizing my courses, in a sense of like, you know, making like a natural flow. Like I'll get emails of some people being like, what order should I do your courses in? And I definitely have like, there's not overlap between the content or anything. So it's like definitely this one to this one to this one, but it's not really this like very clear, you know, thing. So I didn't, on a business sense, I didn't do that very well, but I think that's partially because I never planned on this being my business until it was a little bit too late.
I think the breakdown of like free to paid does make sense for the most part. Like I think one of the free ones is like intro to HTML or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
so
super beginner free course, but like something like Flexbox, that's a premium course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, so when it comes to pricing the paid courses, that's something I always struggle with because I don't know how to price things. The one thing I will say is not to go too low. The Flexbox course is my cheapest one by far. Mm-hmm. And it does decent sales volume, but if it's a low like price point course, but I did that on purpose. It's a small course. It's, mm-hmm, I think 4 hours of content, which is pretty decent. But I guess I wanted to make something fast, easy, people could just consume quickly, but you know, not have it sort of that next tier after the free course was how I thought about that one. And then I also, at that time, I already had another course that was bigger, and I think it was at $50 at the time. So like, well, it has to be less than that one because that other one's like a bigger course. As time's gone on, I've sort of gone up in my price points. So my course that I'm working on right now, which is available, it's in three tiers. So it's 100, 250, and 450, depending on which tier you get. Mm-hmm. And the top tier is on sale for 350 because that's the one that's not finished yet. And I know people in general say like having tiers is a good way to sort of get sales. I don't know why, but I have seen it. Yeah, the way I've always seen tiers. Yeah, you have the price anchoring, which comes in. The way I've seen it, though, is like I don't, like a lot of people might not be able to afford $450 for a course. So I don't want my low tier, which is at 100, to be like, oh, I'm getting part of a course. I still see that as like you're getting this full course for $100, and then the other tiers on top are adding like, let's take a whole new level and stack it on top of that. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to finish the first tier and be like, oh, now they're, I, you know, I don't, yeah, you're not, I'm like missing something.
Anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, for me, that's really important. And it also gives, as I said, it gives me a way of making sure that like, if somebody's interested in that topic, they can still sort of get into it at a more accessible price point. Mm-hmm. So that's why I start that one there. And I think going forward, that would sort of be my base for pricing. It's hard though, like you have Udemy, which sells courses for $5 or $10 or whatever it is.
Sure.
And then you have everything in between.
But there's always a premium on they trust you, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've learned, I about five or 6 years ago, I spent the year really going deep on learning Ruby on Rails, trying to go from being a front end, just HTML, CSS person to being able to build a SaaS product myself. I spent about a year on it, and I learned like the same concepts and the same courses from like three or four different people. And it's just like in the way that one or two people explain it, it just connects, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. The other way, it is my most advanced course in terms of content as well. Like what it's covering is not for somebody who's just starting off. And I try to make it really clear in the marketing and everything. Like this is, if you've been around for a while, it's called Beyond CSS. So it's like you've gotten through everything else. You're ready to take that next step.
Right.
So I also see it as like, it's generally marketed towards people that are working in industry. So you should have disposable income to be able to afford it and other, mm-hmm, things as well. So that's the other reason that I thought that I think it's the pricing there is fair. And again, it's hard to like, what's the real value of this? But at the same time, like I do think I wouldn't price it at that if I didn't think that the value of it wasn't there.
Have you gotten into like subscriptions at all or like a price to get all the courses or anything like that?
No, that's subscription is something that I know some people have done successfully and other people have struggled with. And it scares me a little bit just because I feel like if somebody subscribes and just dealing with churn and like trying to keep people, mm-hmm, subscribed and all of that, to me seems really hard from the people I've talked to. Again, I know some people who have done it really successfully and it's the base of their business, and others who've tried and it actually, I know somebody who it really hurt their business by making that change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hard one to sort of.
I too question it. I see that most core sellers tend to move toward that direction. Like they tend to have like, they sell one-off courses from a collection, and then eventually they add a membership. Like you get all of them. Mm-hmm. But the membership can't be like super expensive. And if that's at a heavy discount, you theoretically could subscribe for 1 month and get everything and then cancel. And that always sort of scares me about it. So I don't know how I would think about that either, but it does seem like a lot of people tend to make that move.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's once you've sort of hit that critical mass of content that you have available. My problem is it takes me so long to create a course that by the time, like right now I'm looking, and my current plan is once I finish the current one I'm working on, which is already taking me way too long to do, I sort of want to actually, instead of like, let's expand my catalog even more, I want to go back over and like my that beginner HTML, it's still a good course. I would tell someone to do it today, or it's perfectly fine, but there's new stuff we can do. There's easier things to do, or, you know, different approaches that we could use. And, you know, so I plan to actually just go back through a lot of the existing catalog. And then eventually I have one course that's sort of my intermediate one that I'd probably break up into smaller bits. And then that's where I might start thinking, maybe not about subscription, but just doing more like bundling of different things instead.
So we'll start to wrap up here. I guess I have like one more main question, and that's around, again, like choosing a top, because you have multiple courses that you sell. So how do you decide on what the next course should be? And how often are you creating and releasing new courses? Like, is it pretty frequently throughout the year, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, ideally it would be, but it takes, the only course I ever did quickly was that Flexbox one. And the whole reason I made it was I said, I've spent so much time on big courses that have taken me forever to create. Mm-hmm. That I wanted to do something on a topic I knew really well that I could get out quickly. I created it in a couple of months. It went really well. I was super happy. And then the plan was to keep doing that. And instead I made an advanced course that was really big, and it's about 2 years in the making now. Mm. Yeah. Most of my three big courses that I've done have each taken me about 2 years to make.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I didn't realize it took that long. And it seems like it's so much more work to create a course than to create these like pretty well produced YouTube videos, but the courses, because it's like there's so much more like riding on the content, and people have to be able to learn from this, right?
Yeah, I have like, as much like any individual YouTube video, I have a standard that obviously I want to keep, but when it comes to like a paid product, I do want to make sure that it works. I also like, I have for the courses now, like there's the written aspect that I have along with, like, it's not just video. It's like the video lesson plus the written content. Plus there's like the projects to follow along with, plus there's extra challenges. And so like, there's a lot more on that side that sort of goes into it. And of course you're doing all of that while also still having to keep making regular content.
Yeah.
So it's finding the time to like, you know, be able to balance everything, which sometimes gets a little bit tough as well.
So I think you told me in the previous one that you've been at this, at least on YouTube, since 2016. And this episode is coming out at the beginning of 2024. What are you looking ahead to this year? Are there any like changes in strategy or things that you're really excited about that you're trying to move toward as we start to wrap up here?
Yeah, I think I mentioned in the last one, I think I'd hired an editor last year. So I do think maybe next year I'll start expanding the team a little bit. I'm trying to bring in more people just so I can actually get more done but be able to like get more created without having to like sacrifice other things that I'm doing or anything.
Where do you see like the other low hanging fruit to start to delegate? Like, you have editing taken care of. What's like the next piece that you'd like to?
I mean, one of the ones that you'd mentioned was sort of somebody to deal with the community in a bit more of an official capacity. I'd also potentially see somebody who could help with on the content creation side, but like sort of those early stages of like, here's the thing I'm learning, or here's the, I don't think I would do it for topics where I'm like learning something I'm not familiar with. But if I had like, I know this topic really well, I just need to have like a demo that would work. Like, here's the demo I need. Like, can you make that for me?
Yeah.
And then I can use that as sort of like a rough draft. I'd probably modify it a little bit from there, but just getting like that certain parts of things done where I'm spending 2 hours working on creating something that if I didn't know the topic, I need to spend that time on it because it's new and I need to learn it. But like if I'm doing something on Grid or Flexbox or something that I'm super intimate with, like just building out the demo is a little bit of a time suck for me at this stage.
Super interesting employment opportunity, you know, job position for someone who is, I don't know, maybe like probably junior is the wrong level. Like they'd probably need to be a little bit more advanced, I would think. But working with someone like you on those types of projects, like preparing educational material for a YouTube channel, that's an interesting career path alternative mm-hmm. to going and working for a company or, you know, freelancing as a web designer or something like that. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I like it. Pretty cool.
So I think that's where I'd be starting with. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, you've been really generous with your time. I've learned so much in just these two episodes that we've done. I'm subscribed to your YouTube channel, so I'm going to keep learning and your podcast as well. So this has been awesome. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
All right. That does it for today's episode of the Full Stack Founder Podcast. As always, the show notes include links to the YouTube channel for this podcast, where you can catch these full interviews on video, and my YouTube channel. That's where I'm building products in public. See you next week.